This is Talk To Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Your host, Joshua Toomey, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk To Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Make sure to head over to Metal Nexus for all of your news, reviews, interviews, and the archives of the Talk To Me podcast. This is episode 169. Special guest this week is Gene Hoagland of Testament. I sat down with him recently at their show in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Slayer concert, Slayer, Lamb of God, Anthrax, Testament, and Napalm Death. Sat down prior to the show and had a nice chat with Gene. Gene is one of the nicest guys in metal. If you ever have a chance to talk to Gene, make sure to take that time because he is a wealth of knowledge and a super cool guy at that. And yes, this was recorded prior to Slayer in Nashville. So I got to see Slayer at least one last time on their farewell tour, and they put on one hell of a show. I was very underwhelmed at Louder Than Life, but man, they put on one hell of a show at the Municipal Auditorium. Which is funny because I ran into so many people that I knew, and there haven't been shows at the Municipal Auditorium in forever. I mean, that's where I saw Pantera. That's where I saw Megadeth back in the day. That was where everyone played in like the 70s and the 80s. And so it was cool to kind of go back to my former stomping grounds, not only of Nashville, but the Municipal Auditorium and check out a show. And I just want to say thanks to Gene for the hookup on the tickets and the passes. They were much appreciated. All the bands were great. You know, Lamb of God is Lamb of God. They're one of my favorite bands. Anthrax put on one hell of a show. They played my favorite song, Got the Time, so that's going to give them the stamp of approval anytime. And then, like I said, Gene Hoagland and Testament absolutely killed it. And speaking of Nashville...
Still love it loud?
So do we. Rockin' Pod returns to Nashville on Saturday, August 25th. Over 25 rock podcasts from all over North America recording on-site. Vinyl and memorabilia dealers selling the best in rock merchandise. And awesome rock musicians and personalities participating in signing sessions and on-stage panel discussions throughout the day. Special guests include current and former members of Korn, Kiss, Angel, Winger, Loudness, Accept, Bang Tango, King Tracy, as well as producers that have worked with Slayer, Ozzy, Alice Cooper, Seven Dust, and many more. More guests being added weekly. Don't miss your chance to be part of an awesome celebration of all things rock. Rockin' Pod takes place at the legendary Nashville Palace, August 25th, 2018. More details available at rockinpod.com. That's rockinpod.com. The Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo, brought to you by Blind Tiger Record Club, School of Rock Nashville, and School of Rock Franklin, a DBG Productions event.
And you guys will see me at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo August 25th, Nashville Palace, Nashville, Tennessee. I will be live on stage 2:15 p.m. with Head from Korn doing a live Talk To Me, talking about his upcoming documentary and all kinds of Korn nonsense. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait to sit down in front of all you guys and gals in Nashville, Tennessee, talking to Head from Korn, Brian Head Welch, talking his new documentary. I will see you guys in Nashville next weekend, the 25th. It's going to be a lot of fun. And the Talk To Me podcast is brought to you by Good Company with Bowling. Yes, my good friend down there in Atlanta, Georgia, Scott Bowling, giving you some of the best interviews on YouTube and some of the greatest production value on YouTube that you're going to find on any show. If you like good interviews, like good production, make sure to check out Good Company with Bowling. Yes, my good friend Scott Bowling in Atlanta, Georgia. His archives have everyone from the aforementioned Head from Korn, Elias of Nonpoint, the guys in Seven Dust, Rich Ward of Stuck Mojo, Eddie Trunk, and so much more. Upcoming episodes with Jose Mangan. Looks like he just released an episode with Kurt Taylor of Murder the Flesh, formerly of Primer 55. And one last time before we get into my talk with Gene Hoagland, just thank you to everyone that has reached out and given some condolences, checked on how I was doing, checked on how everyone was doing from Primer 55. Yes, there were a lot of members of Primer 55. Yes, I played a lot of shows with Jason. And, you know, it was just a tough loss. You know, I had spoke with him through Facebook some in the last few years, but really haven't sat down and talked to him in probably 10 years. So it's a very surreal moment in my life. And a lot of the Primer 55 fans out there, we're hoping that Jason and Bobby would one day kind of reconcile their differences and get back on stage together. I was hoping for that, and I'm not even in the band anymore. Like I told Bobby on the special episode that I put out on Sunday, that I wish that, you know, they would at least gotten together and done some shows here and there. If I was involved or not, those two had a chemistry together. They made some magic, made two great albums, and Jason will definitely be missed. So once again, man, thank you guys to everyone that's reached out, sent messages on Facebook, tagged in posts, and looks like there's a GoFundMe for Jason's funeral expenses. And, you know, that's the one thing about the music industry, you know, might have made a little bit of money back in the day, but that was 15 years ago when everybody was making any money. So if you guys can reach out and support Jason's family and all of this and help out with funeral expenses, that would be much appreciated. And the links will be on the show notes for this episode. So once again, just rest in peace, Jason. Jason Littrell, Primer 55. You will sorely be missed. So with all that being said, let's get into my talk with Gene Hoagland backstage at the recent Slayer show. And then let's get into Rob Rivera's pick from the kit. He's got some oncoming non-point news with the new album coming out August 24th. And he's got a great pick from the kit this week. So Gene Hoagland, then Rob Rivera, and then I will talk to you guys momentarily. Hoagland backstage at the Slayer, Lamb of God, Anthrax, Testament, Napalm Death show. What's up, Gene? How you doing today, man?
Man, rocking. Yeah, we're enjoying the lovely Nashville weather here today. It's been a lot better than it's been other places. So
right.
We're okay with this.
It's nice to meet you finally in person, man.
Absolutely.
The third time
you
on
too,
the show.
Josh. Holy moly.
Yeah, right.
Third time's a charm. We'll get this one right. Thanks for letting me try it over a couple more times.
No, man, you've always been one of the favorite guests of the show, and the fans love you. So,
oh, well, that's
so,
very nice. Well,
great to sit down with you.
It's a real pleasure for me. Absolutely.
All right, man. So we got to start off with Lamb of God has another fill-in drummer that's not Gene Hoagland. How did that happen?
Well, they got a perfect guy. You know, Art Cruz is doing a great job. You know, he's most recently from Prong, of mm-hmm. course, and he was with I believe Winds of Plague. I know we toured with them back in the Fear Factory days, and Art's a great drummer, and I have a feeling he's probably he probably really looked up to Chris's playing a lot. You know, he's got that style really down, and they sound great. And we miss Chris, of course. You know, we wish Chris the best, and hopefully that he's going to be, you know, back behind the skins super soon. And until that happens, they got a great guy in Art. I talked with John Campbell, the bassist, for a minute. He's like, oh God, yeah, you're the first name that came up, you know, but we just figured you're probably busy as hell. And we don't know what our plans are after this. And we don't know what your plans are, but we do know Art's plans. So, you know, we figured we'd go with Art. I'm glad they did. You know, it's working out great for them.
Yeah, I mean, the videos we've seen online so far have been fantastic. Art seems like he's, you know, nailing it. And, you know, Chris has obviously got a very specific style.
Absolutely.
And an amazing drummer.
Absolutely.
So the art of filling in, not Art Cruz, but the art of filling in for a drummer, how long would it take you to learn a set? I mean,
Well, it depends. I have learned, like, for instance, I've learned an Opeth set in 4 hours. One day, you know, there was one time on, you know, we were on tour. Actually, Lamb of God was on that tour as well as Strapping Young Lad. It was the Sounds of the Underground in mm-hmm. 2005. And, like, for instance, Opeth had, you know, I walked into catering and everybody was sitting around their table looking all glum and blue and bummed out. And I'm like, hey, guys, what's going on? And they're like, well, you know, we had to send Martin home to, you know, last night. And we don't really know what we're going to do. We have a show in 4 hours, and we're not sure what's going to happen. And, they turned to me and they're like, can you do it? And I was like, give it a shot, you know? So went back to the back of their bus and got a disc and just listened to it. And, you know, just that's how I learn. Mm-hmm. I don't read music. I don't chart anything out. So I just listen to the stuff a lot, you mm-hmm. know? And so we nailed that one. I mean, there was one time, a totally separate incident, where there was the band Unearth.
Mm-hmm. Great
were
band.
On tour. Yeah, fantastic band. They were on tour, and they were in Edmonton, Canada. And at the time, I lived in Vancouver. And I got a call from Unearth was in Edmonton, and they were heading over to Vancouver. And I was also heading to Vancouver myself. I was driving up from L.A., and I got a call from their management saying, we've had to let our drummer go, and they're playing in Vancouver tomorrow night. Can you learn the set? And I'm like, well, I could try, but I'm not there. You know, I'm driving up myself. And I'm like, I don't have any of their music with me, and we've toured with them a couple of times, but I didn't pay that close of attention to know right. How to play their songs. So they had said, you know, they had asked me, hey, where are you currently at? And I'm like, well, I'm in a place called Weed, California, right. driving north. And they said, well maybe what's the next big town that you're going to be coming into? I don't know, maybe Salem, Oregon or something in a couple hours. And they said, well, just let us call you back. And they called me back a few minutes later. They said, okay, we've spoken to a Best Buy right off the freeway in Salem, Oregon. We've already paid for these. Just walk on in there, grab the two discs that, you know, that they'll hand you and learn these songs off them. And so I did, you know, I hadn't had another 10 hours to drive. So I just learned them on the way up and played the show the next day.
Wow. So I'm assuming you're just like beating the hell out of the steering wheel and
kind of
like that type stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, when I rehearse, you know, I do a lot of finger tapping. That's how I do my little drums there. And yeah, I just concentrate on the songs. I just listen to them a lot, and mm-hmm. I just burn them into my brain. And for instance, you know, today I thought I was doing Anthrax today. I got the memo wrong, so I'll be filling in for Charlie on a few shows on this one, and that starts tomorrow, fortunately.
Nice.
But yeah, so that's with Charlie, for instance. The first time I ever did it, first time I ever filled in for him, it was the first day of the tour, and he came to me and said, look, I'm in a real, you know, there's a personal situation happening. His mother was in the process of passing away. You know, she had just gotten really sick. And he's like, I have to go home like ASAP. When can you be ready? You know, can you do this? And then when can you be ready? And I was like, well, let me film you tonight, and I'll just watch it, and you just leave when you got to go. You mm-hmm. tell me what day you need it, and I'll be there. He's like, well, how about, you know, 3 days from today? So I had a couple of days to learn the set. And yeah, I just filmed Charlie. And I also try to play his show. Mm-hmm. And on this tour, it was kind of the same thing. I had a few days to actually prepare for this one. So I was able to watch some YouTubes. And I was going out on the first, you know, 2 weeks of this year. I was catching Anthrax's set every night, filming a little bit, make sure the endings are right. And yeah, so I'll film you, I'll watch you, and then I'll cop all your licks. So I try to do Charlie's show, you mm-hmm. know. I play it on his kit. We don't change anything on the
right.
kit. We don't turn it into a Gene kind of drum kit. And so he's really right hand dominant, and he's got a lot of stuff over on the right side. So I throw up my right hand a whole lot on the Anthrax show. So that's pretty good.
So when you play his kit, I know you play open handed. Are you mm-hmm. still able to do that on his kit?
Yes, I am. And you know, I wherever he's, because he's got two hi-hats.
Okay.
He was the very first guy I ever heard with two hi-hats. I remember listening to stuff like Indians and stuff, mm-hmm. and you hear a hi-hat cooking through the first verse, and then you hear that hi-hat totally change and switch sides. I'm just like, what? How do you produce that? I had no idea. 1988. That you could have two hi-hats, you know. Drummers have one, so.
So a lot of bands, you know, they'll record a song a certain way, and so you're learning off of the CD, and then you get there, and you're like, and they're like, oh yeah, by the way, on this bridge, we actually play it six times instead of four,
absolutely.
And we, you know, how often does that happen for you?
Quite a bit, especially with Anthrax. They do a lot, especially when they're doing a headline show. That's where they change a lot of the arrangements, and Charlie does not play the same licks that he did in the recordings 30 years ago. So I do all his updated stuff. Whatever he's playing on the tour now, I try to do most of those. Mm-hmm. But one thing, you know, I know Charlie Benante's style more than any other drummer on the planet. And I'm the drummer that knows his style more than any other drummer on the planet. So I know his style really well, and I know his whole approach. You know, I've studied it in all the stuff I'm doing to prepare for playing with them. And Charlie he plays with such feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, because there's a lot of tempo rampings, like where a normal drummer would not be doing what Charlie does, you know, like just right in the middle of a phrase, all of a sudden it gets faster. And that used to confuse me. I'm like, mm-hmm. Why does that happen? You know, like Charlie's a good drummer. He's not just turning off his meter mm-hmm. and all of a sudden just, I'm playing faster and I don't know it, right in the middle of something, you know, that you shouldn't be. But then I realized that Charlie plays with so much feeling. And he is an absolute free form drummer every single night. Every night is different. He does not do, a lot of his licks are the same, but every night you don't know if he's going to completely rearrange a part mm-hmm. right in the middle of a song, you know? So I just try to go with all the licks I've seen him play a bunch of times. I'll go with those, even though there might not be the ones from the record. Yeah, he has such a free-form style, and he plays with such feeling that I think he just, when he feels like, I'm going to push it right now, doesn't matter when and where, I'm going to do it, that's what he does. And so now I understand that approach totally. So,
well, I would think, too, that he has a lot of ownership of those songs because
Absolutely.
He wrote those
songs,
you know what
totally.
I'm saying? So he knows, he's like, you know what, if I want to do another fill right here, I wrote these songs, you know, Scott, you just got to follow me. But
exactly. I think that's exactly how it works. And since I didn't write the songs, I just want to make the band, like I understand when they have other drummers come in, a lot of times those drummers will come in and play like the album versions mm-hmm. and you know, that means the band, like on the transitional show mm-hmm. where Charlie's gone, new guy's in, and he's playing the album, that means the band's on stage. They're probably not thinking as they're playing the songs like, oh shit, now I got to turn around and play that thing that we did 30 years ago because right. we're doing the album version. You know, I just try to make it a seamless transition for the guys up front for the band and just so they don't have to augment their show any. That's why I'll learn Charlie's licks and all that sort of stuff.
Are you a note writer? Do you have notes anywhere? Is it all in your head?
It's mostly in my head, you know, and I since I do just beat the songs into my head, you know, every once in a while, as I'm watching them, I'll you know, like if I'm not filming it or something, I'll think to drop down a note. Hey, put this note down in your little notes and just remember this later. And I never do.
Right. So I remember seeing Korn when actually Mike Borden filled in
for
him.
Yeah, sure.
And that's when David, I guess, hurt his wrist or something. But David was sitting off to the side and he was like, you could see Mike counting him down
wow.
to like, and then like he would point at the ride or he would point to the, you know, he was like coaching him the whole
yeah,
time.
Man.
So you ever had anything like that happen to happen?
I wish. God, I love that, man.
Where you at, Charlie?
Come
sit by him for a show or two.
Totally. Well, I've kind of joked with Charlie, like, hey, man, I'll play any show you want. Like, if you want to put on some shades and a hoodie and go out to front of house and catch your band, mm-hmm. you know, I'm trying to do pretty much your show. You know, see what your band sounds like. Drummers never get to do that.
Right.
You know, like, even if you're a guitarist, you could take your wireless out to the front of house, hear what it sounds like. You know, drummers don't get to do that, so...
Did you do that on the Slayer tour early on, like maybe during sound check or something for Dave?
I did.
Yeah.
And that's just for Dave so he could go out and hear what the band sounds like, you know. So that was pretty cool.
Very cool. We talked a little bit about Fear Factory earlier, and I kind of wanted to talk about, was it Mechanized that you're on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the first album that Dino came back. You know, were you in the band at the time when Dino came back, or was that like you came in afterwards
No.
and that whole dichotomy?
It was afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think they were probably trying to go with Raymond,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think Raymond was interested. So I did Fear Factory because Byron Stroud, who was with them at the time,
yeah.
he appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came to me and said, hey, man, can you do this? And I'm like, anything for you, Byron.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a band that I... would ever care to play for, but I love you and I'll do whatever it is. And I was buddies with those guys. It's just, that's just not my scene at all. Their music was not my action whatsoever.
Yeah.
So that was kind of odd coming in and playing a bunch of...
I felt like it did like fit your skill set though. Like it, obviously being the atomic clock and being very precise and things like that.
Sure. So yeah, that was okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember recording the piss out of the songs and then they probably went and gritted them anyway. And that's probably why I didn't do the next.
Well, there was a story. Was there another album where they had you in the band and still just did a drum machine? I believe that was a story on another album.
Pretty much that's how it went down. Yeah. You know, I didn't really get alerted to how things are going to actually be going down. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's how, you know, and it's already been well played out there that, you know, I read it on Blabbermouth.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Fear Factory's finishing touches on their new record. And I was still waiting on a schedule, you know, so, and doing demos mm-hmm. with a drum machine, that was part of their mechanism or whatever, their system.
Right.
And then they just decided, I guess, for the next album, they did the exact same thing. They recorded a bunch of demos, and then they just released those, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But I don't know the particulars of how it went down, but all I know is I was not alerted. So,
well, that album may not even exist in the world because it's not on Spotify. I noticed that today, so I don't even know what happened. I had to listen to it today on YouTube to get the refresher. So if it's not on Spotify, it doesn't exist.
There you go.
In most worlds.
That's where I see it.
You want to talk a little bit about your art?
Oh, cool, man. Yeah.
When did you start doing the art, and then, like, what kind of inspired you to do that side of the...
Well, the thing that inspired me was I got a call from a company called Scene 4, and they were in the process of doing a whole bunch of guys, and mm-hmm. they've done a whole bunch of guys, so I was the latest in their list of guys they wanted to get, and I had a little bit of time available, so I jumped up to L.A., and all it really is just you have these lit drumsticks, mm-hmm. and you play your kit, and they capture what you're doing on your kit. And I just kind of approached it like, hey, these are sparklers, you know, like just playing. And so I don't think I even played the drums. I don't know if there's any video or anything of it. I know I've done some like whatever commercials or whatever about it, but I don't know if there's any footage of me just like, you know, I'm just waving them around like a sparkler, you know. Other guys are playing and stuff, and I'm like, well, God, you know, it's time-lapse photography, you mm-hmm. know. They do those open shutters and all that sort of stuff, so maybe that's not called time-lapse. But also, if this is getting too loud,
I think we're good. It's okay. Not too bad anymore.
All right, well, yeah, so and the fun thing about Scene 4 is it's run by a gentleman named Corey Danziger. And he was a child actor, and he was in the movie The Burbs.
Okay.
And that's one of my wife and her family's favorite movies. So when she found out that, what? This guy's in The Burbs? Holy moly. She got really excited. She's like, give two shits about your art.
Right.
No, I'm joking. She dug it. But she was like, I care about your art. But wow, dude from The Burbs. Holy moly.
Right.
So that was pretty fun.
Yeah, it's always funny when something like that is what makes them freak out. You're like, I'm on tour with Slayer, and they're like, yeah, who is that again? And
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you're like,
God,
yeah,
totally.
I'm hanging out with the guy from The Burbs. And
yeah, there you
that's
go.
That's when it becomes a little bit more, you know. So doing the art that way, do you have any desire to, you know, buy an easel and paint the landscapes?
Well, no, but you know who is actually a fantastic artist is Mario from Gojira. He's got great artwork.
Yeah,
I got one of his pieces he gave to me. But this was just such it was such a fun process, and the artwork itself came out really, really cool. So mm-hmm. I'm stoked on it, and if Scene 4 were ever to say, hey, let's do a round two of it, I'd be there in a minute, you know, because they're really nice people, and it was really awesome to do it. And they have such a roster of awesome drummers on their canvas, as it were. So that was pretty cool.
Well, very cool, man. Well, let's talk about the early days of Dark Angel.
Absolutely.
How did you end up, you know, going into that band?
Well, let me see. I was doing, I did lights for mm-hmm. Dark Angel as well. I had just come off the first Slayer tour. I was doing lights for Slayer on that one, and we've talked about that one.
Yep.
And I got back from that, and Dark Angel were my buddies, and you know, we're all pals. They were playing tons of shows with Slayer back in the VFW halls and the little you know, the parks and recreation centers, you know, wherever Slayer would get gigs, or I'd go see Dark Angel with them a lot. And I became friends with Jim Durkin, their you know, leader, mm-hmm. I suppose, at the time. And he tells me that I went up to him at one point and I said, "Your drummer sucks. I'm better than your drummer. I want to play in your band." I don't recall saying that, but yeah. I used to be a really cocky kid, and I wouldn't put it past myself. But after we got off that tour, they were in need of a drummer, so you know, we got it together, and I had formed a band with Michelle Meldrum, who I just met on that Slayer tour. We put a band together called War God, and while I was in War God, that's when Dark Angel, and I was going out and doing Dark Angel lights and stuff, and so. You know, I ended up, you know, Michelle kind of kicked me out of the nest saying, "Hey, go join Dark Angel. That's a band that's going somewhere. We're just starting, so we don't know where we're at." Mm-hmm. And I remember being on that Slayer tour, and I might have mentioned this before. One of the reasons I think they didn't call me back for anything was I was a complaining kid. And I was, you know, I thought I was supposed to be saying things like, "Oh man, this road life is so hard, man. I can't wait to get home." Because I've said this before, I've read all my rock heroes saying, "Oh man, road life is so tough. You just can't wait to get home." I'm just mimicking them, parroting them. I didn't really believe that. You know,
you were what, like 16?
16. Yeah. And so, you know, they're like, "Well, Gene, if you want to be home so much, we'll keep you at home for the next one and we'll go do it without you." And when Jim Durkin, you know, he called up Carrie and said, "You know, I know you've seen Gene play. You know, I know he's doing some stuff with you guys here and there." And Carrie was like, "He's a great drummer, a whiny kid, but, you know, if you could deal with that, you know." And so I got the little endorsement from Carrie, and then I was in Dark Angel before I knew it.
How much younger were you than those guys?
I was 17, and they were, you know, men of the world at 19.
Okay.
They're badass 19-year-olds, you know.
Well, I just remember even, like, in my early playing days, I mean, how difficult it was if I was like, the youngest in high school, and they were out of high school.
Yeah,
sure. That's a deal-breaker for a lot of bands, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, no matter how good you are, because, you know, you can't get into certain clubs or certain nights.
And I was fortunate. You know, I was already, you know, well in my 6 feet, so, you know, I never looked like a 17-year-old, you know. So I was going to clubs at 13, and, you know, carding, IDing was a lot less prevalent back then, so I never had any issues where I had to sit outside the club, wait, go play, then go sit back outside the club. I never had any of that. I could just walk in and do my thing.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. How long do you think you'll end up playing drums? I know it's a very
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be doing this like deep into my elder years, like 70s, 80s, or whatever.
Well, I mean, you got to think, like, and I know that, you know, Bill Ward not doing the last Black Sabbath
sure.
for health reasons, and, you know, a lot of, and drums, that's a very, you know, obviously a very physical, active act.
Absolutely.
You know, so you feel good?
Like, oh, God, yeah. Yeah, well, like, I figure, I've lost about 130, 140 pounds over the last few years, and I am at the carriage that I am. I'm 50 now, mm-hmm. and I'm at this carriage, and I can pull all this hauling double bass stuff off at this carriage, and I seriously feel like I'm 27, you know. I do not feel like, you know, when you are 27, you think about 50, you're like, "Oh God, that's old,
right?"
You know? I do not feel 50 in any way, shape, or form. However, I'm going to be doing this deep into my 70s, playing like brutal, severe drums, brutal, severe metal. And I figure I can get away with this carriage that I'm at, this size that I'm at right now. And when I'm 70, I figure I got to drop probably about another 30, 40 pounds and become like cut, like super cut. So I figure when I'm 70, mm-hmm. I intend to feel like I'm 22. And I intend to be doing all this at the same rate. Nothing. And my playing is getting better. Your chops do change, I will admit. Like, you know, playing with Testament and doing a 35-minute set, and it's not a very double bass heavy set on this tour. It started off double bass heavy, and then the songs just have changed. But I use the set as cardio, you know. And for instance, on nights where we don't have a lot of double bass, I won't take the leg weights off. I'll play the whole show with them, and that's what I'm doing here, just to give myself, my legs, you know, I'll throw in as much double bass as I can, but I'm trying to give my legs as much of a workout as they can get, because this, I utilize this as full-on cardio workout, part of my regimen, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, it's this, I have the most incredible, you know, just, I get the most incredible release or whatever it is. I get to do this as a workout. Mm-hmm. You know, that's pretty cool. A lot of guys have to go to the gym and hate life and put on their, you know, Limp Bizkit and their Affliction shirts or whatever and just, you know, be meatheads and at the gym. And I get a gym workout every day.
Right.
So that's pretty good.
The I think the last time we talked, you talked about you finally had to retire your combat boots. Did you ever find a new pair of boots that you're going to wear for the next 30 years?
I do have one. You know, my wife bought me this killer pair of boots, but I kick my shoes off a lot during the day, so I need boots that are slip-ons, and that's what my other boots, the classic ones that I had for so many years, they just got so stretched out that they were just slip-on boots. I didn't have to lace them up or anything, and so I like kicking off my shoes a lot. And so, yeah, I just picked up a pair, and I have them here. I probably won't play the show with them tonight, but I got a new pair of boots that has zippers. You know, you can zip them. You don't have to lace up a whole bunch of stuff. That drives you nuts. So zip them on, zip them off, and good to go. So, yeah, I'll be playing with the boots on this one again. I did on the last tour, threw some boots on for that on the last Slayer leg. So I'll be doing that again here.
That's one of the better things I heard coming out of, you know, with Vinnie Paul's passing. But one of the better things was they would talk about he would just walk on stage in like a pair of flip-flops and just play those shows. I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah,
like, that
man.
Doesn't make any sense either.
That's pretty good.
Any thoughts on Vinnie Paul?
Well, we miss Vin.
Yeah.
You know, totally. He was a brother to us all, and he was just such a kind, warm gentleman. You know, we miss him terribly, and we miss his brother, Dime, and the fact both of them are gone. It's like, holy moly, that's... Now it's getting really, you know, I mean, it was serious enough with Dime gone, mm-hmm. you know, and that was, you know, there are no words that can explain the tragedy of Dime's taking from us, you know. Dime was taken from us.
Yeah.
And, you know, so was Vin, but, you know, I'm still not sure the cause. I never heard the cause, and I'm sure it wasn't anything too shifty, but it might have been a lifestyle, mm-hmm. you know, over the course of one's life. I don't know. I don't think it was a... I don't think it was an OD or, you know, alcohol poisoning or anything like that. I just think his body decided that, hey, I'm going to check myself out mm-hmm. and catch you boys on the next side, you know.
I think with Dime's passing, you know, I think we focused on Dime so much that we almost took Vinny for granted.
Fair enough.
And, absolutely. You know, now that they're both gone, you're like, oh, fuck,
Yeah, man, I could see that. Absolutely.
You said a minute ago that you lost about 130 pounds. Did you do anything special or is it...
Just went super healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just when I was in Fear Factory, I know we did, my very first touring with them was down in South America. Excuse me. And
yep.
And down in South America, they have churrascarias, which are the Brazilian barbecue joints where they bring all the meat around on a skewer. And we hit those every single night after the show. So... I ended up putting on about 20 pounds in 12 days. And when I came home, my wife was like, holy shit, dude, I've seen you on tour. But now I've seen you, like, I've never seen you do what you just did on this tour. What the hell happened? And so I went to my doctor. I had a doctor appointment. And at the time, I had diabetes. And the doctor had told me, well, next time we see you, if you don't change some of your habits, you're going to have to start jabbing insulin. And I was like, no way, F that. I'm not doing that. came home, told my lady at the time, she's now my wife, but told her about it. She's like, man, F that. I've been patient watching you eating cheeseburgers for the last couple of years, and now I'm taking over. I'm going to put you on a plan. You're going to follow what I tell you, eat what I tell you, and... In 3 to 6 months, you're not going to have diabetes anymore, and you're going to lose a lot of weight. And that's precisely what happened. So, you know, just super healthy, lots of salads, just doing all the right stuff. I go home, I work out. I don't eat the greatest out here. Like, for instance, I'm eating every day and every night like I'm playing a 90-minute set or an hour and 45-minute set when I'm doing 35 minutes. So... I don't have the, I have enough discipline in enough areas that I just don't have the discipline to stop eating. So
when you do, in the next few days, when you do take over for Anthrax for a couple of days, Testament Anthrax are back-to-back, so you just like walk off stage, take a deep breath, and then just go right back out, basically?
Pretty much. I take a deep breath of nicotine, and have a smoke, and come back in, and sometimes maybe eat a Cliff Bar or something. But both these sets are so simple. Like, when I was doing it a few years ago, it was a 70-minute set for Testament and then a 90-minute set for Anthrax. And those were back-to-back. I loved that, you know, and that was awesome. You know, playing for 2 hours and 40 minutes, pretty much back-to-back. That was really cool. That's a really good cardio workout. And, you know, the playing the drums that's not the challenging part.
Yeah.
You know, it's just having the mental stuff, making sure you have all the arrangements. That's the challenging thing. And it's a little bit of a challenge because, like I said, I do Charlie's show. I play Charlie's kit. I don't change anything on it. We don't set it up for Gene or anything. I play Charlie's setup, and he's got a vastly different setup than I do. And so I give my right hand, my right arm, quite a workout with Charlie's kit. But, you know, having them back-to-back, I love that.
Yeah.
You know, I did it on the last tour, and we had Behemoth in between us. So that was just kind of like a little odd, weird, you know, just kind of kink in your schedule. But once I warm up, it's like, hell, just keep me warm and keep me sweaty and just throw me back out there. I'm good.
We've been watching the hell out of John Rice playing drums.
Oh, yeah, for Behemoth?
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, they had Inferno back on this one.
Okay.
So that was cool. And, you know, I went up and played a song with them. I did a tune with them. And they had been asking for, you know, a few weeks, like, hey, man, can we get you up there? And I was like, okay, let's, you know, pick one of your simpler songs. Don't pick one of them blasty ones right now. I don't have any blast chops. And so, you know, they did. And we did the quickest little workout on it. And then we jumped up on stage and played it. And I butchered it, like completely butchered it. Like, whatever was supposed to be happening in my earphones, my ear monitors, my in-ears, was not happening. And then all of a sudden that click track started, and I'm like, wait a minute, holy shit. And I just effing butchered it. I'm sure it's probably on YouTube. And so at the end of the day, after we finished, you know, after I played that tune with them and I saw them after the show, I was like, dude, let me have another crack at that. And they're like, no, it's cool, man. We're fine. It was great. We loved it. I'm like, no, I hated it. Yeah, please let me do this. And so the next day, the last show of the tour, we did it again, and I played it well. And fortunately, Gary Holt was standing behind me, and he filmed some of it, so I was able to put a little bit of that on online. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, I nailed the second one, botched the first one.
All right, man. Last couple questions. What's the future for you? I know Testament's talking about doing some, you know, demo work and new album next year. But do you have anything else going on?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're trying to arrange. We're looking into, you know, a lot of Dark Angel stuff, and we're trying to get that new album written.
Not Death Angel.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'll go write a record with Death Angel too.
Might as well.
So we're trying to get Dark Angel rolling, and, you know, we're thinking about doing some touring next year as well. And we also have Death to All going as well, and that's going to be awesome. We're going to hopefully be doing some stuff in 2019, and that's going to be super killer. And we're going to try to do a couple of really special things with both bands, so that's going to be awesome. And, you know, I have my project with my wife that I'm still working on, and that's for me, the most exciting music I'm doing right now, because that's like kick ass. Like, she does not lighten up on me at all. She's like, you know, Hoagland, you play them double bass, man. You know, those other guys you're working with, they ain't going to work you. I'll work you. So that's pretty cool. And there's a bunch of stuff. There's some things coming out next summer that I can't talk about yet, but it's super awesome. It's super huge, super, like, super amazing. And that's pretty cool. But once we get the word that we can let that slip, we'll be doing that. We'll be announcing that. So that's pretty good. You know, who knows? Maybe get some Galacticon stuff off the ground. You know, I love working with Brandon and all the guys from Galacticon, and so that's always fun. I always enjoy those tours. Those are super cool. And let me see. Jesus. I'm sure there'll be some clinics. I'm sure there'll be some... there'll probably be some clinic touring, I would imagine, and just lots of touring, and hopefully getting a few albums out, and just keeping the ball rolling for 2019.
And the DVD, anything, any plans on like a third DVD?
Right now, boy, I haven't even thought about that. But when I was doing the second one, I was thinking, oh, yeah, the third one. I'll put this and put that and do this and do that. And we'll see if I even go the avenue of a DVD. I may just, if I do more stuff, maybe I'll just throw them online, throw them on my channel sort of thing. But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, the DVD is kind of a lost art at this point. But, yeah, throwing them on YouTube, throwing them on,
sure.
That's probably the future and all that.
I would imagine so, absolutely.
Well, Gene Hoagland, man, thanks for taking the time today.
And, Josh, to me, my pleasure. Absolutely. It's always super fun, and I always enjoy talking with you. Anytime you want to do this, I'm ready.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
What's up, everyone? This is Rob Rivera. from the band Nonpoint, and you're listening to Rob's Pick from the Kit. Before I get to the pick, I want to let you all know that next Friday, our brand new album from Nonpoint, entitled X, comes out on Spine Farm Records August 24th, available everywhere. Anywhere you buy music, Apple Music, it's available on Spotify, Google Play, BestBuy.com, FYE. And we got awesome merch bundles at nonpoint.merchnow.com. And we have vinyl. We have an awesome USB flash drive thing that's got the coolest content that you probably won't be able to get anywhere. So yeah, check that out. Our brand new tour starts next week in Lexington, Kentucky at the Manchester Music Hall. We're going out with He Is Legend and Letters from the Fire. So very excited about that bill. Going to be like a 5-week tour. On the day of our release in Orlando, we're playing the House of Blues. So come down there and pick up a CD and let's party. Get your dancing shoes on and let's do this. This week, I'm going to pick the band Dark Angel, seeing as Gene Holmgren is one of the best drummers to ever exist, and one of my favorites. I'm going to pick the song The Burning of Sodom from the Darkness Descends album. When I listened to this back, God, I was in high school. That's how long that guy's been around playing. It was some of the fastest stuff, and it really didn't really showcase what he was about like these days. All you heard was fast drumming, but as time went along with Dark Angel, like the Time Does Not Heal album, the Terry Date produced records, man, that's when like his drumming really came out in the light. And if go to Wikipedia and type in Gene Hoagland, and you'll see his friggin' resume. Played with Death, Testament, has played with, I believe he has filled in for Anthrax. And he is just above any level drummer. I mean, there's a reason why they call him the Atomic Clock. He played with Fear Factory, Devin Townsend, I think Strapping Young Lad. He's played with so many people, and his resume just speaks for itself. Definitely one of the best under the radar thrash bands to ever come out that never really got his due. They were from the Los Angeles area, and I know they did some reunion shows last year. I really would have loved to have seen them. I had the pleasure to see them years ago in Boston at the Channel with this other band called Sam Black Church opening up. And just amazing thrash, and I'm glad that they were able to do some shows, and some people were out there really excited. A lot of these older bands are coming back out, like them and Exhorter, and all these cool bands are coming out. So anyway, check it out, Dark Angel, The Burning of Sodom.
Yeah.
All right, huge thank you to Gene Hoagland. Once again, one of my favorite guests on the podcast each and every time he comes on. That was the third time. There will definitely be many, many more times. Anytime he needs to promote anything, I hope he takes the time to come on. Make sure and check out Good Company with Bowling. Yes, my good friend Scott Bowling down there in Atlanta, Georgia. Let him know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you. And then I will also see you guys Nashville, Tennessee, the Nashville Palace, August 25th at the Rockin' Pod Expo. I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite Primer 55 songs, going out to my man Jason. So let's check out some Primer 55. So until next Thursday, I am Joshua Toomey. This has been the Talk To Me podcast, and I will talk to you soon.
Crushing the line again is all for the middle, feeling like there's gotta be a way to crush you. But what was the people treating themselves with a little left? It goes away with it time. Pushing everybody out the way, don't get the fuck away. Pushing everybody out the way, it's like me, that's a place that keeps it so sentimental. Because it's time, I gotta let it out. Let you know way too much inside. If you're an East, they shave and mold you. You better run, you better open your eyes. Listen, what the fuck I gotta say? So what the fuck you say? Listen, what the fuck I gotta say? One time. Self-control, I don't wanna ignore you. So I guess I'm taking my time. This is the life you lead, you're so sentimental. Hold your tongue, you gotta keep it inside. You gotta be so damn sentimental. You said that damn, I gotta keep it inside. Always ending your back, the place that I start. Running around in circles, forcing out control. I know that better days are coming. Roping the fingers and hitting it inside. Counting all the lies along the way. Count one, two, three. Count another lie, lock it up, it's mine. This one's in the world's ground. Let's take a
up. This is Bobby Burns from Prime 55, Murder in the Flesh, Killer in the Workplace, Soulfly, etc. And you're listening to Talk To Me podcast.